Good morning, everybody. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are live here on Facebook. You might be watching on YouTube or maybe even our website. So a warm welcome to you into this today's conversation between Justin and I. We are going to be talking about a wonderful poem called St. Francis in the Sow this morning, chosen by Justin. And as ever, we are very excited to be here on this Third Space project that is turning towards life. And we will be reading this poem twice through as we normally do, and then feeling into what arises and what wants to be said between Justin and I as a way of reflecting on what this means for each of us. We so appreciate when you comment below and share what this is like for you as well. We are amazed that people are still joining our lovely little group. That's actually not so little anymore. I think we're on episode 44. Is that right, Justin?
Uh-huh.
So we're going great guns. We've done 44 of these already and somehow not managed to be outside of reception or accessibility to be able to do it through this whole time. So I'm quite amazed at that. I think it's the longest standing something in terms of a thing happening every single week that I think I've ever done. And I'm extremely grateful for that and for everybody being with us and for the feeling that it matters somehow for me and for other people too. So a warm welcome to everybody here.
Good morning, everybody, from me too. As always, I'm really thrilled to be doing this. And this source that we're going to read today has become extraordinarily important to me. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring it is, well, you'll see when Lizzie and I read it and get talking about it, I think. But here's the thing that I've been seeing is that we are so in our culture separated from our own goodness and from our capacity to know that about ourselves. And anyway, I'll have more to say after we've read it. So shall I read it first?
Yeah.
Lizzie, why not? So this is a poem. It's called St. Francis and the Sow. It's by Galway Kinnell, who was an American poet who was alive until about 4 years ago. And here we go. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within, of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch. It is lovely until it flowers again from within, of self-blessing. As St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow, and told her in words and in touch, blessings of earth on the sow. And the sow began remembering all down her thick length, from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and slops to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the hard spininess spiked out from the spine down through the great broken heart, to the sheer blue milk and dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 teats into the 14 mouths, sucking and blowing beneath them. The long, perfect loveliness of sow.
I'm unmuted. Sorry, there was background noise from the traffic. St. Francis and the Sow. The bud stands for all things, even those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within, of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely until it flowers again from within, of self-blessing. As St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow and told her in words and in touch, blessings of earth on the sow. And the sow began remembering all down her thick length, from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and the slops to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the hard spininess spiked out from the spine down through the great broken heart to the blue milk and dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 teats into the long, perfect loveliness of sow.
The first thing that's happening for me as we're reading it is I'm thinking about the work that we do, Lizzie, this, what it is that we get up to in third space coaching and with integral coaching. Mm. And the reason I was thinking about it was so often when I talk to people about the work, the way that I work, maybe people who've heard a bit about coaching but haven't found out what it is that we do, the first thing that people say is, so you help people get more effective, right? You help people get faster to their goals. And the first thing I say is sometimes, because there's something more important that I've got committed to and I know we've got committed to, and the thing that I've got committed to that's it is expressed so extraordinarily in this poem, which is seeing that I heard this a totally different way today than I've read this before. The fourth line, everything flowers from within, of self-blessing, even those things that don't flower. And I'd never really understood the third line, even those things that don't flower, but for everything flowers from within, I always thought, well, that's a contradiction. I don't understand how that works. But today, what I see is that to be a living being, and particularly to be a human being, is to always have this flowering that comes quite naturally from within because of our long, perfect loveliness. The long, perfect loveliness of sow is also the long, perfect loveliness of being a person.
Mm.
And how much we forget it and how much we've been taught that that's untrue. Boy, you know, when I picked this for this week, I could really feel this feeling of there's some way in which I'm off in my life. There's something huge that's missing.
Mm-hmm.
I can never make up for it. I will never be the person that I'm meant to be, that is called for. That it, I don't mean just in some grand way. I mean in just in a very basic, ordinary, being an okay human being kind of way. And that's what I think, even if we've had loving parents and all of that, I think that so many of us are in desperate need of being reminded of what Galway Kinnell says, which is that we are lovely. And that is where all of our flowering comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And we can trust that. And then just to finish the thought about coaching, which is that whatever you call it, this work that we've got ourselves dedicated is really a way to do that. Mm-hmm. Is in a very deep and profound way, find ways of telling people, everyone, us clients, ourselves,
mm-hmm.
the truthfulness of this.
Yeah. So I've been reading this poem this morning. Matthew, my husband, and I were lying in bed reading this and just feeling into it and what it really means. And I had this really like a really big feeling about how it is to feel like I have lost sight of my loveliness. And how in this poem it's not saying you can do this on your own. It's not saying, oh, well, if you just remember, everything will be fine. I mean, that's possible. But the poem has St. Francis and the sow in it. And that in order to reteach a thing its loveliness, it requires like a minimum of two entities present, the thing and the thing reteaching the thing. And it feels to me like relationships are the place where we forget our loveliness, and at the same time, they're the place where we get to remember our loveliness. And that as beings, relational beings, we are in service of others. The part of this poem that speaks to me is that the sometimes it's necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, and to put a hand on the brow of something, and through words and touch to retell a story. And in a way, I think that's what the whole point of everything is, is that we are powerful in language and in touch and in actions to be able to be in relationship in that way. And I think in your little preamble to this poem, Justin, that you put on the group, it was something about our culture and how we are trained to spot problems and criticize and to find a way of being that vows to connect to the loveliness. And to first and foremost see the loveliness of something or someone and appreciate it for that feels like a vow that I make, and I also fail at a lot. And so this poem really is a beautiful invitation and a reminder to the vowness of it, to the commitment to be one who's dedicated to her own self-blessing. That means I might be able to reteach a thing its loveliness, and myself my own loveliness too. I think it's kind of in all directions, and I'm really grateful that this poem exists, actually. I think it's a real... I remember when I first read it, I think Nina, actually, our lovely Nina in Dirt Space, I think she sent it to me once, and I was like, whoa, maybe that's where everything comes from. Maybe. And I had never learned that before. And I remember the first time of reading, I was like, wow, that's quite a big deal. You know, that we're not trying to fix things, we're not trying to make things better, we're not trying to change the world, we're not trying to actually reminding everything of its only loveliness, and our own could be the root to everything that we feel is what matters in the world.
Lots of things were coming to me as you were talking. One was remembering many, many weeks ago, Lizzie, when maybe episode 4 or 5 of this, when we were talking about Francis Weller's Gates of Grief. Mm. I think we might have said in this one, one of the things that he says somewhere in his book is what human beings really need to flourish when we arrive in the world is we need to be greeted by dozens, tens, hundreds of smiling faces ready to welcome us.
Mm.
And so much of the suffering that we have in the world, and also the difficulty that we get into is because that wasn't what happened. Because our world isn't structured like that. Even if you have people immediately close to you, most of us only have maybe one or two. You know, if we're really lucky and we're in a family that's got some number of people in it, maybe all of them greet us that way, but probably not. But he was saying, we need lots of this. And the reason I'm saying it now, I think it was coming up, was that I could feel in me, well, yes, everything you're saying, and how easily I forget my own loveliness, get out of contact with it. And I'm inspired by what Gawi Kanel says here, is that, you know, sometimes we need other people and sometimes we can do it for ourselves. Both are necessary. But when I'm out of contact with my own goodness and my own loveliness, I love this. I'm going to keep on saying loveliness because this is the word that he uses so many times in this. It's so much harder for me to see it in other people. I'm so quick when I'm in contact, when I'm out of contact with that, and all I'm in contact with is my own self-criticism and my sense of everything that's missing, and I can't see, and it's so easy for me, I suspect it is for so many people, to profoundly lose contact with this. That's not only when I want to fix myself up, correct myself, it's when I want to correct everyone else. And I can put on an act of not wanting to correct other people, but secretly inside, I just want I want everything to be different to the way it is, and everybody to be different to the way that they are. And it's my guess that that is a lot of the injustice that happens in the world, and a lot of the deep trouble that we get into in our relationships, all comes from there, because it comes from the moment that we start to treat ourselves as anything less than the long, perfect loveliness here, is when we get into the kind of relationship with other people and with the world itself that's that way. So I'm seeing, as we're talking, this isn't just a matter of course, it's so much more joyful, gratitude-filled, alive way of living is to know ourselves with our great broken hearts and our, you know, fodder and slops and the spiritual curl of the tail, all of that, which is true of all of us. It's such a blessing to know ourselves that way. But also in a really important day-to-day living kind of way, I think that this may be the path to proper social justice, and it may be the path to making relationships with people across vast political divides, and it may be the answer to how we deal with when we can't understand why other people have taken actions that we seem at so odds with how we would act, but also how, when we can't understand actions that we've taken, you know, boy, in recent weeks there have been lots of moments when I've thought, I don't understand why I did that. That seems so at odds with myself. And if it seems this way to you, but somehow this is right in the heart of it. And why the thing I keep on learning from you, Lizzie, is how clearly and beautifully you talk about relationship in this. So why this work of doing this with ourselves and doing this with others is so important is far beyond because we'll feel better about things.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit like that source we had last week on friendship, around inside of relationship, all of the shadow will also arrive too. It's the nature of it. It's like, relationship is destined for healing, but healing doesn't mean leaping around in a field of barley with the sun shining on us and singing. It obviously can mean that, maybe, but healing is also finding all the parts of ourselves that need this loveliness retaught to them. And that's what I appreciate. I don't know if this is what Gawi Kanel was intending, but as he speaks around the sow, it speaks of parts. So the part that's the length, the part that's the snout, the curl, the spine, the heart, the teats. And inside of being in contact with one another, we get to find all these parts of ourselves. and see what we can do, what inner work we can do to bring this kind of loveliness or seeing of loveliness to those parts that even feel beyond it. And I think one of the big things I'm appreciating about this poem as well is this reminder that even when I think I can see something, so even when I think I'm right about my inadequacy or my half-bakedness or whatever it is, I'm not seeing everything. I'm really not. If anything, I'm seeing narrowly, very, very narrowly, something. And this poem is a reminder for me of how narrow I can become and how also much it takes me to accept my narrowness instead of thinking that actually, no, that's justified and that's right. I think that's my continual grapple, is feeling like I'm right about myself when I'm giving myself a hard time. Because it's so rational, it's so correct, it's so factual, it's got so much backing it up, all of that kind of thing. And so this kind of radical move where I have to actually say, I'm wrong about my rightness. Like I'm not seeing everything here. There's more to see than just the way I'm criticizing myself right now. And that I could find some way of bringing my own capacity to reteach loveliness to those parts of myself that feel beyond it somehow. So that's what this poem is doing for me, is, yes, of course, there's the part in how we do this for others, which is not separate from that, by the way. Like, my capacity to do that enables me to do it with others. But I can be with my own particular suffering on a given day. And because of things like this poem existing and the things that I read and reflect on and whatever, I feel like I can do this. And sometimes it's really hard to do this work of reteaching my parts of me their loveliness. But it is possible. So I end up feeling kind of hopeful, like, oh, however dark it feels, however lost I feel, however much I feel like I haven't got the thing that's being asked of me, that it's blind to me what I'm supposed to be or what I'm supposed to do, that there is a way that this kind of self-perception can affect and be part of my experience, and I can cultivate that. Like, I have the power to cultivate that. Whatever's happening, I can do that. And then that translates into how I can do that with other people as well.
I really love what you're saying about how much of ourselves we forget, mm-hmm. and how convinced we get by our forgetting, by what's left out. Mm-hmm. I know, I think I may have said this last week actually when we were talking about friendship, how often one of the ways that I know you is someone who reminds me of the parts that I've left out, particularly when I'm in trouble. You have a graceful and loving and powerful way of showing me, and I know showing lots of other people, and I think that that's part of what we can be for one another, is, like you were saying, when you've forgotten yourself, sometimes we need somebody around us. Exactly like in this poem. It's an amazing, such an amazing couple of lines in here. St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow and told her in words and in touch blessings of earth and the sow. And then here's the bit that I just find so moving. And the sow began remembering all down her thick length. And it struck me when we were reading that remembering is to put back together. It's not just the recalling of some piece of information, like recall. To remember is to assemble what's been dismembered. And it's such an extraordinary line that the sow began remembering all down her thick length. So not just as an idea, but including everything that had been left out.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me as you were talking that this can be a very truthful way of looking at ourselves. So can we include everything? Like, can I remember my dedication and my care and my integrity, as well as my confusion and my rage and all the actions I've taken that have hurt myself and other people? Can I include all of that, bring it all together, and see that all of that together amounts to something both beautiful now and with enormous possibility, which is what it is to be a bud. Mm. Right back at the start of the poem, he says the bud stands for all things, for everything. Even the things that don't flower are still buds.
Mm-hmm.
So when we can bring all of that together truthfully ourselves, or to see it in another person without it being a sort of corrective mechanism, you know, like if I'm seeing all of you, well, even if that's possible, as much of you as I can see, and I'm bringing that and helping you to remember, or helping myself to remember, without the secret agenda to then say, well, this bit, you've got to fix this bit, but instead relating to the wholeness and the living possibility that we will yet unfold into some ever more flowering something with the capacity for care. And
yeah,
so I don't know what kind of sense I'm making here, but that it seems to me is the move. And I suppose I'm trying to find a way to speak against the move that is in a lot of our culture, which is that unless you tell people everything that's wrong with them, nothing will ever get better. And I what I'm feeling very strongly from our conversation, from this poem, is unless we can include and welcome and appreciate all of it, the light and the shadow, the slops and the fodder and the spininess of the spine, we'll be stuck in only partially seeing ourselves and all the consequences that you were talking about before.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Justin, what you're saying. And until we sense things in their larger form, we won't be able to address the things that are smaller than that. You know, it's like we go for the small things and the criticisms and the finding the holes without realizing that in order for those things to even be looked at, we have to look at the broader picture. Otherwise it will just be triggering and the same old thing will happen. So rather than practicing seeing, maybe unconsciously practicing seeing the holes in everything, we might be able to practice appreciating what we don't ordinarily see, practice looking more deeply or more widely, more expansively at things or people in the context of, oh, there's something I want to address. You know, that could be your starting point, but how about looking really widely around that point, deeply around that point, in service of the point being addressed? Because there'll be wisdom in whatever your point is, you know, wisdom in whatever criticism that we have. But it is a wasted energy if all you do by bringing that to someone is triggering them, and then you just have an argument and nothing changes anyway. So it's a kind of widening out. I think that's what I'm hearing from what you're saying, like a widening out to see if we can see what's also here, not just the thing that we're kind of hyper-focused on because we're giving ourselves a hard time about it, or criticizing someone else about something, or having a problem with the world about something. I actually, on the way back, I was at a wedding yesterday. On the way back in the car, there was a Radio 4 program, and they were talking about British nationalism, or no, English nationalism, I think it was an English thing, and Brexit, you know, all the things that always get discussed on the radio. And there was a, they had two people in, who, one was a Remain for Brexit and one was a Brexiteer. And they'd also, so there was the journalist there, and they'd also brought a mediator, a professional mediator in, who's done this like really hardcore mediation stuff. And they had the discussion that they would ordinarily have without mediation. And then they had it again with mediation. And the way that she did it was that she said, okay, so you've asked all the questions that you want to ask and you've had a little fight and a debate about stuff. Now we're going to do it differently. So first of all, they moved from the normal studio setup in the BBC onto sofas and a coffee table. So there was nothing between them. And then she said, now I'm going to ask you to ask each other about each other's childhoods and what kind of parenting you had. And she started there and had them ask really different questions than how come you think that Brexit's a good idea or whatever, which is what they just wanted to do, and what journalism typically just gets to the crux immediately without any kind of relationship being built between the people arguing with each other. So that's why I get frustrated. And actually one of the questions was, what's your real bugbear about radio journalism? And one of them said, because the time is short, so you never get to say what you want to say. And the other one said, you never get to speak at length. And therefore so much context gets missed. And what we're often talking about is so complex that you need to know the background and you need to know the backstory and where it all came from, but you never really get the chance. And the journalists only focus on the surface to get it done and it's quick and everybody's had a debate and an argument and everyone's satisfied. And so it was really interesting how this mediator went for relationship. And she got them to a place where they could appreciate each other's heritage, where they came from, why they did what they did, what kind of immigration history they had in their ancestry, all of this stuff, you know, where they grew up, what school they went to. And they had this really, for me, a way more interesting conversation that gave you way more understanding about how they'd come to their points in the beginning. And then an interesting conversation could actually happen rather than just going for the surface at the beginning. So that mediator, I think, was doing this thing, which is to see beyond, deeper, wider, more expansively than the argument that's happening, and put each person into their loveliness in some way that the other person could feel and relate to their loveliness in spite of the different opinions that they had. And it was really, really, you know, this was at like 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, so kind of probably none of the world was listening apart from me in the car, but it was a really lovely feeling to know that there are people out there very intelligent, warm, and also can deal with the journalist scenario of our media, really standing for something quite different to our normal journalistic practices around debate and arguing and having different points of view.
That is amazing.
It was really cool.
I'm going to go and find that program when we finished. And my last thing to say today, oh gosh, I'm so glad you brought that. And that maybe the trouble we get into is because we have practices with ourselves and in our relationships that are essentially like these journalistic practices. Which is, we take a thing and I want this thing resolved so it's exactly the way I want it because it's not good enough. And there's this vast context behind that comes from the, this loveliness of, we've been talking about this poem as if it's the loveliness of me and the loveliness of you and the loveliness of another. But another way of looking at this is that the long, perfect loveliness is the long, perfect loveliness of life itself, with all of its difficulties and all of its beauty and all of its suffering. Can we reach down into this huge context that's behind and include as much of it as we can when we address whatever it is that we address, so that things have a chance to flower, rather than so that we tear them apart? Because that's the journalistic move, really, is to tear everything into pieces. Gosh, what a thought, powerful thought for me anyway, about taking up non-journalistic practice as I encounter whatever difficulty it is in myself and between me and others.
Yeah. Oh, well, as usual, it always leads me to a way kind of deeper space than I find myself in before we begin talking. And I really sincerely hope that that's in service of other people feeling more settled or more open or more connected or something. Because if that's true, I feel like we're doing a really good thing.
So we'll be back next Sunday.
We will.
All being well. That's what we've said every week. Episode 45, I think. I want to remind everyone in the world that Lizzie and our very wonderful colleague Sue are running a two-day introduction to the kind of coaching that we do, which is really an expression of this, in October, 1st and 2nd of October in London. And all the details are on the thirdspacecoaching.com website. And I don't know if I've ever said this way, if anyone's still with us at the very end of this, please tell people you love who you think might be touched, helped, enlightened, illuminated, anything, by this project that Lizzie and I are doing. Tell them about it, because we know it's become very important to lots of people, and we want other people to find out. So you can always point them towards the turningtowardslife.com website, which has all of the previous talks and how to get into the Facebook group, all of those things.
Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week.